Chapter 7. Slashing the yellow gleaming blade of his man-reaper across the chest of an iron-hand sergeant, Typhon shouldered his way through the doorway leading out onto the courtyard in front of Tower 8. He was swathed by the shadow of the 8 great mastodons, their gun sponsons silenced and their canopy drivers' cabins emptied by the boarding actions of his Grey Wardens, who were now pressing on towards Tower 3. From there, the main gate of Majelix would be within reach.
"Commander, we have received a signal from the fleet."
Vias's tone was urgent.
"Why have they not yet attacked the Dark Angels?"
snapped Typhon, as he lumbered up the gentle slope of the courtyard, not far behind the line of his advancing warriors.
"The Dark Angels have positioned themselves between our ships and the enemy. Any attack against them will allow the Iron Hands to move around the flank of the flotilla. We have more urgent concerns, Commander. The Lion's battle barge has launched a torpedo towards Majelix."
"A bluff," Typhon replied instantly. "The Lion will not destroy Majelix any sooner than I or my counterpart in the Iron Hands. The contents of that facility are too precious to risk destruction. Continue the attack."
"Are you sure, Commander? We have detected a cyclotronic warhead. It will obliterate everything at Majelix and 100 kilometers around. It will destroy T'Chulka as well as us. The fleet also reports detection of 7 more Dark Angels vessels heading in system."
Typhon paused, a thought occurring to him. He voiced his doubts to Vios.
"What if the Lion does not desire T'Chulka, but merely wants to prevent us from gaining possession?"
"Commander, we cannot risk guessing the Lion's intent. We must pull back. We can achieve nothing if we are annihilated."
Growling to himself, Typhon activated the company-wide comm stream. He snapped out a series of commands, pulling back his warriors from their final assault on the main gate. Instead, he established them in positions overlooking the central tower of Majelix and guarding the tunnel network beneath. When he was finished issuing orders, he switched his comm unit to a general broadcast.
"Happy now, Lion of the First?" he snarled. "I will respect any ceasefire observed by the enemy. Know now that you intrude upon the business of the Death Guard Legion, and it will go poorly for you."
Surprising Typhon. He had expected no reply to his invective. The comm crackled with a return signal. It was the same resonant voice as before. The Dark Angels Primarch. It was too late to reconsider his scornful words, and his disdain would not allow him to offer any apology for them, even if the Lion demanded it.
"Look to the western skies."
Typhon turned his gaze as instructed. He saw a flash of light in the upper atmosphere, and what appeared to be a suddenly spreading electrical storm set the jade clouds roiling. Seconds ticked past before the crack of the torpedo's detonation reached the commander's audio pickups.
"You are to pull back all forces from Majelix Station. I will grant you safe passage back to your vessels. You, Captain Typhon, will remain at Majelix with a bodyguard of no more than 100 warriors to attend a parley under my aegis. The rest of your force will remove themselves to 200,000 kilometers from orbit. Failure to comply will result in your destruction. The same conditions have been transmitted to Captain Medoa of the Iron Hands."
The link cut before Typhon could respond, not that he had anything to say in the face of such a bald ultimatum. He watched the dark clouds of superheated gases expanding like a blue stain across the western sky and realized that the Lion did not make empty threats. For the moment, his mission was compromised. But that did not mean he had to abandon his objective entirely. He had means unknown to the Dark Angels.
"Vios, 100 of the Grave Wardens to form an honor guard. All other forces are to return to orbit. Have the remaining Grave Wardens embark on Terminus Est, and I want you to take personal charge of the dearth field. We shall allow the Lion to believe he is master of Perditus for the time being."
"I understand, Commander. The Grave Wardens will rearm and repair in preparation for the next offensive. We will not suffer defeat here."
The fog covering the inner courtyard of Majelix Station was dispersed by the plasma and steam of a descending stormbird. The eagle-like craft put down, its landing struts taking the weight as the dust settled around it and the mists began to seep back between the perimeter towers. There were already 1,000 Dark Angels arranged by company between the arriving ship and the main gate of Majelix. To one side of the force waited the Death Guard, while the Iron Hands were guarded behind a cordon on the opposite side of the open space. Only Typhon and Midoa had been permitted to approach the Lion's landing craft, two armoured giants amongst a gaggle of a dozen Mechanicum acolytes dressed in red robes, the heads of all but two encased within breathing domes. Those other two had rebreather attachments inserted into their faces and chests and required no further assistance in the thick Perditus atmosphere. The Lion stepped out on the descending ramp of the Stormbird with Corswain to his right and the recently arrived Captain Tragon to his left. Behind him came a number of banner-bearers and other attendants carrying such articles of Caliban as usually accompanied the Primarch. Plaques, goblets, crowns, shields, and other items associated with the Lion's multitude of ranks and duties. Behind them came the cabal of librarians, now numbering six from the fleet mustering in orbit, their blue robes flapping in the slow but strong breeze. The higher pressure air of Perditus turned even a sluggish gust into a wind that could bowl over a normal man. As one, the Dark Angel silently lifted bolters, heavy weapons or swords, in salute to their commander-in-chief. The Lion needed no helm, though the air was acrid in his throat and made his lungs feel stretched by its weight. He wanted to impress upon all present that he was a Primarch, with the force of an entire legion to command, and not just any legion. The Dark Angels, the first legion. His standard-bearers took up station on either side of the route to the main gate, the Lion's many titles shouted through their external address systems. The Lion's armour had been polished to a gleam, the black enamel as glossy as midnight oil alloyed with diamond, the gold shining like the heart of a star. A scarlet cloak draped from his shoulders, its train 5 meters long, kept aloft by the artifices of Caliban. 10 suspensor-floating devices wrought in the shape of short blades etched with the names of the knightly orders of his homeworld. On his left hip, the Lion wore his great sword, Adamant, its ruby-encrusted pommels and gold-chased hilt and crosspiece glittering as brightly as his armour. Below the right side of his breastplate, the Lion's belt was hung with 6 cylinders, each the size of a man's forearm, bound with platinum, the dull red leather cases containing the proclamations of Caliban, the first laws decreed by the Lion after his ascendancy to command of the Dark Angels, swearing Caliban to the service of the Emperor for eternity. Sweeping down the ramp with his entourage keeping step as best they could, the Lion advanced on the waiting Mechanicum dignitaries. They introduced themselves in ascending order of rank, so that the Lion instantly dismissed the first 11 shriveled, half-machine men and women and focused all of his considerably intimidating attention on the last, Hai Magos Kir Doth Iaxis, overseer of Majelix and custodian of Tichulka, as his heralds attested. Iaxis was a tiny man, perhaps no more than a metre tall, taken to be a child attendant by the Lion until the Magos had pulled back his hood to reveal a near-conical head and ageing, pinched face. The back of the Magos's skull was extended by a series of segmented plates that came to a rounded point and moved strangely of their own accord, contracting and expanding slightly, perhaps as mood or effort occupied the Mechanicum priest. Thin bony fingers, jutting from veined hands, rubbed and entwined together, almost hidden in the cuffs of Iaxis's heavy sleeves, and his slight shoulders were no wider than the Lion's greave. If the diminutive tech priest felt at all threatened by the giant looming above him, and the Lion could have easily crushed him with his foot like a titan of myth, the Magos did not show any hesitation. His thin, reedy voice was almost muted by the bubble of the breather dome encompassing his small head, but the words were spoken with authority and precision.
"We are pleased to welcome you again to Perditus Ultima, Lion of Caliban," said Iaxis, nodding his head inside the breather dome. "Please, follow me."
The Lion felt a moment of impatience, expecting to be forced to check his stride in the company of the minuscule Iaxis, but his fears were misplaced. As the Magos's entourage dispersed, they revealed a set of mechanical legs, which Iaxis ascended quickly by means of a narrow ladder at their rear. Placing his own legs inside the struts of the machine's pelvic arrangement, his robe rucking up briefly to reveal pale, wiry legs interlaced with reinforcing struts, Iaxis settled into the ambulator. With a hiss of actuators, the leg straightened, bringing Iaxis almost to the height of the lion's shoulder. In the presence of his minions, Iaxis would have been above them all, but the Primarch still stood taller than the mechanically bolstered Magos. As they walked to the main gate, the lion became aware of a silver and black shadow hovering close to Corswain's shoulder. Captain Medoa. Glancing to his left, the lion saw Typhon, walking shoulder to shoulder with Tragan. The lion ignored the other captains until they were all inside the entrance chamber behind the main gate. Once inside, the lion turned and addressed his guests.
Captain Typhon, Captain Medoa.
The lion was not sure what he was going to say to them. They were an inconvenience at the moment, but as he had explained to Corswain aboard the Invincible Reason, it did not suit to make hasty or arbitrary judgments about the loyalty and agenda of others. He instead addressed Iaxis.
Magos, please convey the two captains to a suitable part of the facility where they may await my return.
Little brothers, you will watch them for me.
Captains, I remind you that all of Magellix is under the protection of my Aegis. Do not think for a moment to dishonor me.
With that matter perfunctorily dealt with, the lion turned his back on the two captains and continued across the gate hall. The chamber sloped downward slightly, the far end broken by three archways, each leading to a set of moving steps that descended further into the bowels of Magellix.
The door on the right, Primarch, prompted Iaxis. Let me show you what all of this fuss is about.
Most of the Mechanicum facility had not existed the last time the lion had been on Perdita's Ultima, but the tunnels beneath were familiar to the Primarch. Though they were now sheathed in plasteel struts and plastite board, the meandering passageways were etched into the lion's memories so that once they disembarked from the fourth internal conveyor, some half a kilometer below the surface, he was able to find the path unerringly towards the cavernous chamber where the machine was kept. The last time he had walked these tunnels, frenzied machine cultists had been dying by his hand. The people of Perdita's had been enslaved to the machine and died in droves to the guns of the Dark Angels and the newly renamed Death Guard. The lion's first encounter with Mortarion, a tense affair that had ended with neither Primarch liking the other, had taken place only 3 months earlier, and the two legions had been fighting side by side as a display of unity for the Emperor. The Perditians had howled praise to their inanimate overlord even as they perished. Now the tunnels rang only with the boots of the Primarch and the thud of Iaxis's walking apparatus. Coming to the central cavern, the lion found further passage barred by an immense doorway emblazoned with the symbol of the Mechanicum. Iaxis stalked forwards on his artificial legs and pushed a hand towards a reader plate set into the metal beside the portal. The lion's sharp eyes glimpsed a design on the wrist of the tech priest as he extended his arm, a faint outline almost indiscernible from the rest of the overlying skin. The Primarch knew it for what it was immediately. An electu, a hidden mark that could be realized into being by a pulse of bioelectricity. The Mechanicum made wide use of them, as did some of the more secretive orders on Caliban and many other societies throughout the Imperium, but the lion had never before seen the design concealed on Iaxis's arm. It was of a stylized dragon, wings furled, coiled tightly about itself so that its neck merged with its body, and its head lay alongside its tail.
Your electu, what is its significance? The lion asked, as the door locks rumbled into the walls and a heavy clanging sounded from within the door itself. I thought myself learned in the customs of the Mechanicum, but it is a device I do not know.
Iaxis inhaled sharply and glared at his wrist as if in accusation. His expression mellowed after a moment, becoming one of embarrassment rather than shock, as he regarded the Primarch with yellowing eyes.
A childish totem, lion, nothing more, said Iaxis.
He paused, and a moment later the dragon appeared prominently on his withered flesh, glowing a deep red.
The Order of the Dragon, something of a defunct sect now, I am pleased to say. It is remarkable that you could see that pigmentation beneath my skin. I had quite forgotten it.
The door opened with a hiss of venting gases, swinging inwards to reveal the cavern etched into the lion's memories. Much had changed, but it was unmistakably the same place. The vaulted ceiling, nearly 70 meters high and banded with rock strata of many colours, was pierced now by rings bearing heavy chains from which hung guttering gaslights. The walls, nearly 200 meters apart at their widest, were obscured behind panels of mechanical machinery and devices, so that the bare stone was hidden behind banks of dials and levers, flashing lights, and coils of cabling and pipelines. Gantries and walkways, steps and ladders were arranged around the device itself, with sensor probes, monitoring dishes and scaffolding, further enmeshing the centre of the warp device. The thing itself was still there, the sentience or at least semi-sentience that had enslaved a whole star system, hanging in mid-air like a world in the firmament. It was a perfect sphere of marbled black and dark grey, with flecks of gold that moved slowly across its surface. 10.67 metres in diameter, the lion remembered the Mechanicum's first measurements exactly, it was made of an unknown material, impenetrable to every sensor, drill and device the Mechanicum had brought with them. The lion knew that the thing was regarding him with some alien sense. He was not sure how he could tell, nor how the warp device could sense him in return, but the fact remained that he was convinced it saw him this time as much as he had been convinced the first time he had entered this hall. On that occasion, several hundred rag-clad Perditians had died in the next few minutes, unwilling or unable to lay down their primitive weapons, forced to defend their demigod to the last breath and drop of blood. There was something else different, at first unnoticed amongst the rest of the Mechanicum clutter. Two protuberances now extended from the sphere, one at each pole, each only a few centimetres long. The rounded nodules touched against circuit-covered plates stationed above and below the device, which in turn were linked by a dizzying web of wires and cables to the surrounding machines. On a mat in front of the orb lay a small boy, aged perhaps no more than 7 or 8 Terran years. He lay immobile on his side, eyes unblinking, as stiff as a corpse, which he might have been were it not for the gentle rise and fall of his chest. The lion could hear the boy's heart beating ever so slowly and could smell sweat and urine on the air. A pipe extended from the boy's back and another from the base of his skull, joining him with the mechanical array surrounding the warp engine. As soon as the lion's eyes fell upon the boy, he sat up, moving jerkily like a badly controlled marionette. The eyes were glassy, the limbs moving stiffly. With a glance at the alien orb, the Primarch saw the golden motes were moving more swiftly than before, forming brief patterns in the dark swirl.
"You have returned."
The boy's voice was flat and devoid of emotion, his face featureless. A hand raised and waved erratically.
"It talks now,"
said the lion, the words half snarled as he turned on Iaxis. The tech priest shrugged.
"We could not discern anything of its construction or workings, but it seemed likely that it had some means to communicate with the Perditians before we were forced to wipe out their society. It took us nearly 30 years simply to devise this crude interface. We have learnt a lot from T'Chulka. It is very cooperative, if a little enigmatic and, well, alien. I hear, too,"
said the boy.
"You seem displeased."
"You remember me?"
said the lion before he could stop himself. He glared at Iaxis.
"Why the boy? We fought to rid Perditus of slaves, and you have given it another."
"Oh, that," said Iaxis with a dismissive wave of the hand. "It's just a servitor, lion. We tried all manner of computational, logarithmic and cipher-based languages, but none of them worked. When presented with a servitor bow, it was able to tap into the established neural interface in only a few days."
"What a coincidence," said the lion.
"There is no coincidence. I was designed to assimilate with a human form, lion. May I call you lion? I overheard the Magos use it. Is that the correct form of address for one such as yourself?"
The Primarch wanted to ignore the device's questions, but the boy's voice lingered in his thoughts.
"What are you?"
said the lion, stepping forwards until he was within arm's reach of the puppet servitor.
"I am T'Chulka, lion. I am the everything. I believe the Magos and I are friends, though he sometimes grows angry with me. I try to remain patient with his outbursts.
I ask what you are, not who you are. Curse you, what am I saying? You are a machine, a sophisticated machine, and nothing more.
I am everything, Lion, everywhere. I was once servant of the deadly seas. Now I am friend of the Mechanicum.
You are dangerous, said the Lion. A war is being waged for possession of you. I should destroy you and save much turmoil and bloodshed.
You cannot destroy me, Lion, not physically, nor do you desire it. All things desire to possess me. The one they call Typhon dreams much about me. The mind of the other, Medoa, is closed to me. It contains too much iron for my liking. You are neither open nor closed. You scare me, Lion. It was not until you came that I knew what fear was. Your return scares me, Lion. I do not wish to be destroyed.
It was hard not to imagine the words being uttered were from the boy, but the Lion forced himself to focus on the glistening orb rather than its animated avatar.
Iaxis, my puppet needs more nutrients.
As Tichulka said this, the boy's bladder emptied, sending a watery stream down his leg to puddle on the plasteel floor.
My apologies, Lion. I have not yet mastered the basic functions of this form. Its pathways were underdeveloped.
It is the third servitor we have had to attach, explained the tech priest. The previous ones aged unnaturally, hence the youth of this specimen. We are hoping it will survive for a few years longer than the previous interfaces.
You seem to know a lot about what's happening on the surface, said the Lion, suppressing the distaste he felt at Iaxis's uncaring attitude to the expenditure of human lives, even if they were unthinking servitors.
They pass through me, and I come to know them, said Tichulka. Their minds touch upon mine. Yours does, too, but it is far too heavy to carry. How do you cope with such a burden?
My intellect, said the Lion.
Your guilt.
The Lion did not answer straight away, not trusting himself to reveal something in front of Iaxis that he would rather remained inside his own thoughts.
What use is it? He demanded of Iaxis, turning away from the boy puppet. It was agreed with the Mechanicum that Perdita's Ultima and the device were spared only because you thought it might have some purpose we could harness for the Imperium.
And it does! It does!
Iaxis seemed quite animated at this.
Tichulka, will you please show the Primarch what you are capable of?
Before the Lion could offer any protest, he felt his mind and body lurch. The sensation, somewhere between that of a warp translation and a rapid teleportation. Darkness clouded his vision for an instant, and when his eyes were clear, he found himself no longer in the cavern beneath Perdita's Ultima. They were unmistakably in his throne room, aboard the Invincible Reason. Tichulka and his avatar, minus most of the monitoring equipment, floated behind the throne, while Iaxis stood where he had been, a couple of meters to the Primarch's right. Sirens were blaring, and the voice of Captain Stenius was bellowing over the internal speakers.
Battle stations! All crew report to battle stations! Geller Field is being raised! 5 minutes to full enclosure! Repeat, we have unexpectedly translated to the warp. Geller Field is being raised! Be prepared for attack!
The Lion was dumbfounded, unable to comprehend what had happened for several seconds. He eventually realized that Tichulka must have moved the battle barge into the warp and displaced itself, the Primarch and Tech Priest, onto the vessel an instant later. Part of the Lion was appalled by the dangerous situation and Iaxis's naivety in allowing this to happen. A greater part of him marvelled at the unprecedented power on display.
Tichulka,
the Lion said slowly, thinking it would be wise to be friends with the unpredictable machine.
Where are we now?
We are adjoined to the place you call Perdita's Lion.
The Primarch turned to Iaxis, brow furrowed.
Adjoined? We are in the warp. How is this possible? We were far too close to the world, to the star, for a translation.
T'Chulka does not have to worry about that sort of thing, Lion, the tech priest said with a toothless grin. It is able to furrow directly from real space to warp space without any backwash or gravimetric displacement.
Why have I not learnt of this before? Demanded the Lion.
Our studies are far from complete, replied Iaxis. At the moment we are at the whim of T'Chulka, and as you see, it is a little, well, temperamental.
T'Chulka, I wish you to return us and the ship to Perdita's Ultima.
The Lion kept his tone calm and friendly, suddenly aware of how precarious his position had become.
Of course, Lion.
The boy's thin, blood-starved lips twisted into an abhorrent approximation of a smile.
What do you wish me to do with the rest of your ships?